Aboriginal sovereignty campaigners say that their struggle to decolonise and achieve independence of their own tribal areas within Australia has gone to another level, and that the Australian government is now in a precarious situation. Veteran Tent Embassy campaigner Michael Gillar Anderson says that the Australian government's been burying its head in the sand for years, but it will now be forced by circumstances to respond to their action. Michael, welcome back.
Yeah, good to be back with you, mate.
Some breakthroughs on the road to sovereignty, and a subject that has remained very passionate to you and to many other Aboriginal and Islander Australians, but the struggle for sovereignty has been ongoing behind the scenes. Many white fellas would ask the question, well, what's this sovereignty all about?
Well, we've done a lot of work in the last 12 months, as you say, behind the scenes. There's been a lot of examination of laws that exist in this country and international. And so what we've done is we've looked at all the court decisions in Canada, in the United States. We looked at English Privy Council decisions. We've looked at laws that were established by proclamations, both on Canada and in regards to the South Pacific. And having investigated all of this and put it all together, we now find a very strong argument and very specific argument that shows clearly that in Australia, as with the British Columbian Indians, who are non-treaty Indians, that our rights have survived the sovereignty of the Crown, and there were procedures and processes put in place, but Australia failed in their fiduciary obligations to follow those, and so we've now come to the position where, as a result of the decolonisation laws in the United Nations, together with the 1952 resolution in terms of internal decolonisation, which has seen the former USSR broken up into its smaller states, such as Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, etc., we now here in Australia have the same rights under those laws. And so to be self-determining in the way in which we want, we now identify our territorial boundaries, our linguistical boundaries, our languages, our custom, our law, and we've defined those boundaries, in particular the Murawari people, and they've now declared independence as a republic.
With so many of the mob right across the country, we are traditionally looking at lots of different tribal areas, lots of different language groups. Now, basically what you're saying is the sovereignty will be with each of those groups as a separate entity?
That's correct.
What's the process going to be to allow this to happen, Michael?
Well, first of all, they've got to be able to articulate how their laws and how their governance set in place, and how those laws, like they have their languages, they have their religion, they have a population, they also have a method whereby they survive, they sustain their lives within their territories, you know, according to their own customary economics. And now with non-Aboriginal people fitting in there, the people will have to talk to them, because I know that the white people have already been meeting with the Murawari people who live within the Murawari Nation. And these are businessmen and farmers, and they've had, they're starting to have talks with them now, and they're in full support. And so the processes are basically that you must be on your land, you must be able to identify your territories according to your law and custom, and of course, from there, we develop the internal processes of governance within the state. And, of course, the Murawari Nation or Murawari Republic have those things set in place, and they're combining their own ancient governance systems, and they're working with non-Aboriginal people now and other Aboriginal people who are not all familiar with their own customary laws. They're bringing them back into the fold, and they're going through the process of developing governance around that.
Your mob have been dealing with non-Indigenous Australians. There are some people out there, obviously, who can accept Aboriginal people are entitled to be recognised as who they are on their country.
Absolutely. I've only been back home for about 12 days now from Europe, and I've been over there looking at what happened in Russia under the former old USSR, just looking at it from a distance and seeing how that happened. I've also looked at that Yugoslavian wars that happened about 20 years ago, and you see how they broke up, you know, Croatia, Montenegro, and Serbia. So those states now have their own independence, and they've got their own boundaries, and so they've decolonized from within, but they did it by way of a violent war. We here in this country, we don't have to go down that process. We don't have to, because we have a pre-existing state, and the law in Australia now recognises that, and they call it MABA. They call it the Native Title Act, and there are laws within that. And so all the only contesting element that exists here is the dispute of the fiduciary obligations of the Crown, where Australia ignored those instructions of the Crown to negotiate with Aboriginal people to get their patrimony by negotiating on land, and that didn't happen. So Australia's really brought this upon themselves, and I don't know whether they accept the fact that, you know, their errors of their ways of the past is going to come back and haunt them.
In all reality, I would say that the Australian government would, A, first deny that any of this is a legal possibility, and then, B, if there is any inkling of a possibility taking place, they would put every resource possible to make it very, very difficult for the Aboriginal sovereignty movement to gain any ground.
Well, they're trying to do it just by burying their heads in the sand right now, you know, and ignore the fact that these things are happening. The reality is that they are. And we've already notified Ban Ki-moon of the United Nations, because it's one of the prerequisites of a revolution of this kind, that the United Nations can't do anything unless they're notified of the actions before the action take place. Now, we've already clearly articulated our position to Ban Ki-moon after the 40th anniversary of the Aboriginal Den Embassy, when the movement, sovereignty movement, really got underway, and that was declared a movement. And so Ban Ki-moon is very much aware, as the Secretary-General, of our intentions to decolonise from within. And as a consequence, there's a United Nations General Assembly resolution dated 1951 that was passed. And then there was another resolution passed in 1981 where the United Nations have now committed themselves by way of resolution to protect those within the nation states who seek to gain their independence and to be self-determining. And the United Nations has an obligation under those resolutions. And if we get to a point where Australia sort of begins to try and do anything by force of arms or increase in police presence and where nation states are doing these things, then we have a right, because we've now notified the Secretary General, he's on notice, we have a right to call upon the United Nations to send in peacekeepers and maybe facilitate mediation between us and the Australian government.
How, where and when will this pressure from the UN start to come into effect?
Only if they start increasing police presence in our communities, in our areas, and you know, if we find that a lot of our people are being put under pressure by the increase of police surveillance, and that is state police, and the moment they do that, we will call upon the United Nations and we will send delegations to the UN, and we'd like for peacekeepers to come into this country to allow us to develop our own statehood and our nationhood. While we're doing that, if Australia chooses to negotiate with us nation to nation to sort out an agreement by way of a treaty or arrangement, then that will be the process, and we'll accept that process and look at it, and then it'll be subject to those individual nations agreeing to on their terms. But we're advising the people that you do not enter into any negotiations until you are fully aware of your domestic legal rights as well as your international legal rights as per the United Nations Charter of Human Rights and other rights under civil and political rights.